Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, live in Los Angeles, hour two. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. It is great to have you in today. Vernon Davis was tied for the highest drafted tight end, which is number six. And Kyle Pitts has a chance to be drafted around that. Kyle Pitts had an unbelievable blazing pro day. Was it this morning or yesterday?
Today, yeah.
Today. And so Vernon is the last tight end that literally you thought the best athlete in the entire draft was a tight end. And I grew up in a time when tight ends mostly blocked. And then there was a guy named Kellen Winslow, and it sort of changed. And then there was Ozzie Newsome, and it sort of changed. But for a long time, it was just, you just didn't, I mean, I grew up watching the Seattle Seahawks. That was my first team as a kid. I don't remember their tight end. I remember Steve Largent, Sherman Smith, Jim Zorn, Steve Rabel. I can remember Dan Dornick. I remember all their skill people. I don't remember their tight end. In the 70s, it just wasn't like a position. Dave Casper for the old Raiders was pretty good. Benny Cunningham for the Steelers got a little love. But it's a different position now. In fact, it's the hardest position to defend because America is producing more and more 6'5" guys that run a 4.4, and they're too gifted to play defense. They can catch the ball. And what do you do with them? The wide receiver, and they're too good to put on the offensive line, and they're too tall to be a running back. So you're getting all these great athletes. They look like basketball players. Like Kyle Pitts looks like a basketball player. And all of a sudden, he runs a 4.2, and you're like, okay, he could be a receiver tight end. So we'll have Vernon Davis in a few minutes. Joy Taylor's joining me. So Fox Bet now has the Niners as the favorite. The betting market has changed. In Vegas, Fox Bet, Justin Fields now goes to the Niners. So I follow the betting markets. When the betting markets change, it's a pretty good idea. They're not building more casinos because they're wrong more than they're right. So I said to myself, okay, so every time new information comes out, let's just do a new top 10 mock draft. It's fun. We can all play along. So you ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right, number one. All right. So this is the easiest pick on the board. There's only two easy picks on the board. This is one. Jags get Trevor Lawrence. First of all, he fits geographically. Urban Meyer has a history of working with young quarterbacks. His whole career was Tebow and Alex Smith. He is the prodigy, if there is such a thing in football. Yesterday they were talking about, I was reading a website talking about the pros and cons. And the pros were just about everything. The cons are occasionally struggles with accuracy, but that's mostly when he plays like, you know, Ohio State's front or LSU's front. Number two. All right, second easiest pick. It looks like the Jets like Zach Wilson. You know, listen, if you take a quarterback one and two, one of them doesn't work. He's got Robert Saleh. Is it going to work? I don't know. I think he's a little slender, didn't beat the best competition, but this is the pick. Everybody likes him. He's got a nice arm. So Zach Wilson goes to the Jets. 49ers now, the betting markets have moved to Justin Fields. Very, very highly coveted prospect. He and Trevor Lawrence for the last 3 years have been the guys. They've been camps together. He's from Georgia. Now, I thought Atlanta would have a hard time passing on him, but it's really interesting how I thought this morning. So, at least I think so. So, Justin Fields goes to the Niners 3. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to go. I don't think Atlanta needs a quarterback, but I'm going to go Atlanta drafting Trey Lance 4, and here's why. Trey Lance, like Josh Allen, smaller school, really could use the right staff, the right coach, and a year to learn. I think Atlanta now looks at him and thinks, this kid's great. We know whoever we draft is not going to play in year one. If you draft Justin Fields and Matt Ryan has a two-game losing streak, and Justin Fields is from Georgia, fans are going to want to see Justin Fields. They're going to want to see Zach Wilson. But fans haven't seen Trey Lance play. He is a prospect. And so you can put Trey Lance on the burner for 2 years under Arthur Smith, and by the middle of the second year, You played him in exhibition games. The fans are patient. Matt Ryan's still good. So I think Trey Lance now, that feels right to me, goes four to Atlanta. Number five is Cincinnati. They don't take big risks. There's two great offensive tackles. I'm going to go, they draft the Big Ten tackle. It's in their geographical footprint. It's a very conservative organization. They already have a very good left tackle. They're going to go get Northwestern's Rashawn Slater, who can go interior or on the tackle. Matched that very well against Chase Young. And again, it plays well to their Midwestern conservative base. He's a Big Ten player. He could be left tackle, but many people think he's more dominant on the interior. And to protect Joe Burrow, who's already hurt, I think it's a solid pick. Number six, what has Miami been doing in the offseason? Getting players to help Tua. They get Kyle Pitts. Number six, you can line him up anywhere. It gives coaches great flexibility. Devontae Parker, they added Will Fuller. Many people think they're going to build O-line and go for running backs. So this is a best friend for a young quarterback is a lively, athletic tight end. Go ask Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz. Quarterbacks that are young, learning the game, love to rely on a 75 to 85 catch tight end. Kyle Pitts to Miami. Detroit 7 needs a lot of defense, but they lost Kenny Golladay. I think they have to give Jared Goff a weapon, and they get Ja'Marr Chase, who I think's the most NFL-ready wide receiver. That's what my scouts think. He looks like a pro. He acts like a pro. He's an alpha. He'll demand the ball. But you can't bring Jared Goff over, lose Kenny Golladay with a weak offensive line. You're going to look so ridiculous as an organization if Jared Goff is struggling and Matt Stafford is flourishing. You're going to get crushed by the Michigan media. You got to get him some weapons so Goff is at least semi-comfortable. Ja'Marr Chase to the Lions. Somebody always drops that's gifted. Penei Sewell goes to Carolina. I don't think Matt Rhule's going to fall in love with Mac Jones. They'll play Teddy Bridgewater or get Sam Darnold. This is the best player who drops. Listen, whoever they have at quarterback, this is a 10 to 15 year left tackle. We see this every year in the draft. There's a great player, and because of needs, he drops four or five spots. I'm going to guess Penei Sewell. Again, last year they went heavy defense. Carolina's going to go offense. I still think they make a move and get Sam Darnold. Number nine, Denver's the toughest pick for me. They've got a million needs on defense. In free agency, they went and got Kyle Fuller, a corner. They could go get another corner. But I'm going to guess here that they're going to go with Micah Parsons, who is easily the best linebacker, super fast, best Big Ten linebacker, best linebacker in America. They're a bad defensive team, and they have a defensive coordinator running the organization. And last year, they went big into receivers and big into offense. And all they've done is care about offense. And Vic Fangio's like, I got a couple of pass rushers and nobody else. So they went and addressed corner and Kyle Fuller. They go get a, he'll start day one for Denver at linebacker. And number 10, Dallas. This is kind of easy. They get one of the two corners. How about Patrick Surtain? Big brand Alabama to big brand the Cowboys. I think this is an easy one. This is the third easiest pick. They got to put some money on the defensive side. They have one young corner they really like. And then it's a lot of guys, they pay a lot and aren't very productive. So that's my mock draft. I think the first, the second, and the tenth pick feel like the easiest one. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Of course, I love the draft. A lot of it's speculation. Some of it's need. Some of it, like I think Cincinnati has to get an offensive lineman. Joe Burrow's the franchise. You could go get Kyle Pitts. It wouldn't shock me. But Joe Burrow gets hurt one more time, it changes the trajectory of Joe Burrow's career. Kyle Pitts, to me, is the best athlete in the draft. He's a tight end. And again, I grew up in an era when tight ends mostly blocked. And then you saw Ozzie Newsome. Then you saw Kellen Winslow. And then it was like, game on. Vernon Davis was the last tight end that went to a combine. And I thought, oh, actually, the best athlete is a tight end. And increasingly, we're seeing these 6'5 and 6'6 athletes. They're too skilled to put on defense. They may be a little big to put at receiver, but they're taking over the game. These tight ends are taking over the game. And Vernon Davis is the one at the combine. You're like, the best player is a tight end from Maryland. And Vernon Davis is now joining us live. Super Bowl champ with the Broncos. 14 great years in the NFL. So, you know, when you look at a Kyle Pitts, Vernon, you looked bigger. I always thought you could block. Kyle's more of a receiver. I thought of you, Vernon. You could block if I had to. I could put you on the line. I could put you out. But do you see some similarities with you and Kyle Pitts?
Yeah, I like Kyle Pitts. I think he's very 6'6", 240 pounds. I think he's a great asset to any team because his ability, when you watch him on film, he's always going up to grab the ball. And that's what you want in your receiver. You know, it's like a quarterback's dream to have a target that's always going up for the ball. And he does that really, really well. But he can run. He's tall. He's fast. He's big. I mean, I'll take him on my team any day.
You know, tight ends now are kind of like in vogue. Everybody wants the tight end. You kind of changed it, Vernon, a little, where everybody still was kind of like, well, it's a tight end. You know, you guys, tight ends weren't getting paid the big money. When you came into the league, did you feel like to some degree you were the guy that coaches finally said, we're going to design multiple plays for a tight end?
Yeah, when I came in, because of my speed, North Turner at the time, he was really crafty with coming up with plays because he wanted to utilize my speed. And like you said, when I was coming in, the position was starting to change. You had Antonio Gase, Tony Gonzalez, those guys paving the way. And then I was able to bring in the more of the speed element. So I was, you know, a lot of my routes were downfield, and then he would get creative with me, with putting me in the backfield and handing me the ball. So nowadays, a guy like Pettis, you can do a lot of that with him as well.
Now, Kyle's not known as a blocker, and when I watched his combine today, Vernon, he's slender. I mean, there's a reason he's running what he's running. But you will, let's go back to your career. You were a bigger, thicker tight end, so you could play on the line. Do you think it's an issue? Because you know how the game works, Vernon. At one point in the red zone, they're going to ask Kyle Pitts to block. Do you worry at all that he doesn't appear to like that part of the game?
Well, I think a lot of tight ends, even me, at one point, I was all about catching passes. I didn't really want to block. But now, if you look at Kelce, you look at Gronkowski, those guys there, they're catching passes, but they're also blocking. I think if he wants to be a well-rounded tight end and he wants to make it far in this league, he's going to have to learn how to block. And he has the ability. You know, he just has to stay in the weight room, continue to learn the craft, because blocking is all technique. If you get with the right coach that can teach you how to get your arm play long, get your arms out, because that's what they're teaching you. They teach you how fast can you get your arm on the defender's pads, right? How fast and how long can you play, right? And if he can learn that, oh, he'll be a force in this league for a very long time because of his ability to go up at the highest point and get the ball.
You are one of the players in my lifetime that literally it felt like the combine changed your life. I mean, it was like, okay, we know Vernon Davis is good. Then you took your shirt off. Everybody went, okay. did you sense, Vernon, before you went to the combine, did you have a sense that this puppy could change my life, the trajectory of my life, this combine?
Let me tell you, I felt like I was going out there and I only had one shot. You know, I was listening to that Eminem song, where you only get one shot. Don't miss it. Don't miss the opportunity, right? And I just kept hearing that, that one shot. Because I know when you go to the combine, it's a way for you to get your stock up. And that's what these guys have to realize. The combine will change your life, change your career. If you're able to show these scouts, hey, I can, you guys never seen me run. You never seen me block. You never seen me lift weights. But when you get in front of me, I'm going to have the best interview possible. And this is the opportunity. You only have one time to do it. So you have to make sure you take advantage of the moment and bring out the best in you. And now is the time.
It is. I said this earlier that there's something about the tight end and young quarterbacks. Because the game is very fast. You're a college quarterback, you go to the pro, and it's just going too fast. And it does feel like the tight end is closer to the quarterback. Often you're guarded by a linebacker, so you have a step or two speed advantage. I always feel like tight ends are a young quarterback's best ally. Did you sense that in your career?
Yes, I feel like young quarterbacks are really are really great for quarterbacks because of, you know, if the wide receiver is not open, then you're going to check. You're going to go to the tight end. But nowadays, these tight ends they're faster than wide receivers. They're bigger and they can do so much more. So why not utilize this target, right? This weapon that you have, and that's what we're seeing. That's why we're seeing these tight ends catch 80 to 90 balls because they can do so much more than a wide receiver. And that's what you want on your team. You want a guy that's well rounded that can do it all. And it makes it much easier for the quarterback, especially if you have that tight end who knows how to stay quarterback friendly, and he's always getting open because he's such a huge mismatch for any defender.
17 games now in the NFL, first time they've changed in a long time. Now, as an offensive skill person, you can make an incentive or a bonus. The revenue share goes up. But I also think to myself, if I was a running back, that's 25 more hits I take. How do you view it? How do you view a 17th game?
You know, I've always been, you know, since the beginning of time, I always enjoyed the 16 games, right? But now the only way the 17 games would work is if you eliminated some of these preseason games, right? You can't have four preseason games.
Right, right.
You have 17 games because this sport is so brutal and it's just so invasive on the body, the athlete's body. I mean, you have to make sure that there's something that there's a give and take there because 17 games is a long stretch. I mean, you have some guys who come in the league. I remember when I came in the NFL and I hit a wall. I said 16 games. I'd only played 10 games and had six more games to go. But now you're telling me I'm coming in, I'm at 10 games, and I have seven more games to go. That's a big difference. I mean, it may not seem like it. One more game probably doesn't seem like a lot to someone who's watching from the outside. But I'm going to tell you, it's a lot. It's a lot.
You played for a decade with the 49ers. I like Jimmy Garoppolo, but he gets hurt a lot. And Vernon, you know this to be true. Some guys, their bodies just aren't built for it. And Jimmy G not only gets hurt, Vernon, he gets hurt in week two and three. It feels like to me, it's just kind of time. Like it's too valuable a position to not. And go back to your career. You played with guys, they may have been bigger than you. Some guys get hurt. Like the body's not built for it. You weren't a guy that got hurt. What do you do with Jimmy G in San Francisco?
Yeah, I know John Lynch came out and said Jimmy G is still in the team's plans, and I strongly believe that. But like when you have a quarterback and he's always getting hurt, I'm not saying he's always getting hurt, but he's the team has been counting on Jimmy G. They needed him last year, you know, they needed him the year before that, and he hasn't been able to do it. So if I'm the general manager, yeah, I'm going to go out and find another quarterback because we need that competition. You know, we need to see. We don't know. We don't know if Jimmy's going to get hurt this year. So in order for us to win games, we have to put ourselves in the best situation possible. So I'm not against John Lynch and the 49ers organization going out and getting and finding another quarterback because, you know, this it's a business and they're trying to win games and they can't really rely on Jimmy G to stay healthy. I mean, we don't know. There's an unknown there. So, you know, if I'm the general manager and I'm the team owner, I'm saying, hey, look, we have to really put ourselves in the best situation possible. So we're going to go out and draft the quarterback. And look, if Jimmy G's doing well, let him play. If he's not doing well, then we put the young guy in. If Jimmy G gets hurt, the young guy goes in. But now, like when I was in Denver, Peyton and Brock Osweiler, right? When Peyton wasn't doing well, they put Brock Osweiler in. But when Brock started declining in his play, then they put Peyton back in. So you're going to have that situation there with Jimmy G and the new guy coming in. And it's okay. You know, it's okay. Jimmy G's he's an older guy, so he understands it's a business. At the end of the day, if it doesn't work out for him in San Francisco, then someone else will take him. I mean, he's proven that he can play this game at a very high level. So I think the sky's the limit for Jimmy G, whether it's with the 49ers or somewhere else.
By the way, you founded Real 85 and Between the Lines Productions. You have been incredibly busy. You pivoted into acting. Bruce Willis, John Malkovich, Luke Wilson. I always knew you had like an artist sensibility in you. You were. I always knew that. Now you're into the acting stuff. Are you pretty good? Be honest with me. Has it been easy for you?
I think it's like anything. It's always tough. It's a challenge. But if you put the time in, you can just continue to get better and better. And, you know, I've seen my growth from the time I started all the way up until now. You know, I just have to have time. I have to have put the time in and get those years, just like when I was playing football. Yeah, you get the years in and you just keep growing.
Your sister, your mom, your dad, anybody in acting? Or this just a scratch you wanted to itch?
My granddad was an amazing painter. And I think art correlates in so many ways. And then when I went to college, I was actually an art studio major. And from there, when I arrived in San Francisco, I took a class at the Shelton Theater of Art, improv classes. And, you know, I fell in love with the craft. So then I started branching out and doing more movies. And next thing you know, I find myself retiring and going right into the world of acting.
Yeah, you're in The Chariot starring John Malkovich. It's in post-production.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
As the Braves face Bryce Harper and the Phillies, then the reigning champion Dodgers take on the Rockies. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Can't wait for baseball season to start. By the way, the Lakers are champions. The Dodgers are champions. The Clippers, the Rams, LAFC, UCLA now all winning. I think it's so delicious, the irony. John Calipari was rumored to get the UCLA job. His team couldn't make the tournament. Mick Cronin was the third choice. He's in the Final Four. There's no way Calipari gets this team to the Final Four. And it's really interesting to watch how hard UCLA plays. It's a glamour program. They play with the intensity of a mid-major. They're just very Mick Cronin. They're tough guys. They get after you. That was kind of his reputation at Cincinnati. Like, tough guy, tough team. They feisty. They get after you. And it's just irony. All the Calipari's going to UCLA, and he would have been a glamorous coach for a glamorous program. But they get this kind of street tough guy, and he's transformed the program. UCLA is like tough and physical and gets in your face and bangs with you. And your teams become the coach. And I mean, I know Gonzaga. Mark's a very smart, thoughtful guy. If you watch Gonzaga play, they're very smart. They're passing, their ball movement. They're a very thoughtful team, very joyful. Mark's a very happy guy, very thoughtful guy. You become your coach. And Calipari's a star. Kentucky's built on stars, right? Like, that's what they are. So I just think it's interesting. The guy that got criticized for hiring made the Final Four. And the guy who was supposed to get the job, the superstar coach, couldn't make the tournament. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
More pro day talk. It's all your right. Favorite.
Love it. Yeah.
Justin Fields was very impressive at his pro day yesterday.
Fast, very fast.
Daniel Jeremiah thought he showed everything you would want to see within a pro day workout. He said that the environment was set up for Fields to excel, and he knocked it out of the park. He's also set to hold another pro day in April, and 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan is expected to attend that one. He also ran a 4.44 in the 40-yard dash.
Yeah, when he takes his shirt off, he doesn't look like your typical quarterback.
No, he is. He's definitely athletic, and I think it's kind of, you know, it's what Nick said earlier. Like, it's weird how once the season ends, all of the evaluations start changing. And I think it's because we have this period in time between the season ending and the draft where we're constantly asking for evaluations, and it just gets kind of boring to give you the same evaluation every single time, and you want to add information to your scout. And I do think that the pro day matters a little bit. It is a spotlight situation. All eyes are on you. No, you're not going up against defenders, but there's, you know, hundreds of people in the building. There's scouts, there's coaches, there's people that you've looked up to your entire life. There is a little bit of pressure involved in a pro day. Also, you want to be impressive, because if you don't nail your pro day, which is, you know, the floor, then you're really in trouble. So you could have a great season or have an okay season. If you don't have a good pro day, then that could be bad for you, like you said yesterday, because I know you don't put too much into pro days. But
yeah.
I think what's happening with Justin Fields is he's just the product of overanalyzation. I think people want to give a little bit extra to Mac Jones. They want to, you know, try and find something to add to it. I think it's actually surprising that Zach Wilson is above Justin Fields. It was Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields for how many years? And now all of a sudden, Zach Wilson has jumped Justin Fields. Now, maybe the Jets feel like Zach Wilson is a better fit for them. Who knows? And obviously, we don't know that the Jets are taking Zach Wilson. But I think Justin Fields is going to San Francisco. And if he does end up going there, that he's going to have a great opportunity for success. So Washington signed Ryan Fitzpatrick. It was assumed that he would be the starting quarterback next season, but Taylor Heinicke isn't settling for the backup spot and is looking forward to competing with Fitzpatrick. He said it's going to be a fun battle. We're going to hopefully help each other. I'm looking forward to picking his brain, getting better as a quarterback in that way, and whatever unfolds. But again, I'm excited for the addition. I'm excited for this offense that we've put together.
Don't get it. Don't really understand it. The mystery team in the league. Do not get it.
I think they're waiting. This is what I think Washington is doing. Because they're not in a position to take one of these top quarterbacks, right? And they don't have a quarterback. I know that there's Washington fans who are getting enraged that we keep talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick this way. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
17 years.
A backup quarterback.
Great one.
A great one. But he is a backup quarterback. That's not an insult. It's reality. He's a backup quarterback. Who's 4-3 as a starter this
year. People's standards are very funny. When Washington was really a great franchise 15, 20 years ago, if you'd have tried to peddle them a quarterback who, after Theismann, that had been in 9 teams for 17 years, they would have been outraged. They've been so bad at quarterback now, they're trying to validate a quarterback who's been on 9 teams in 17 years. Washington's standards have fallen. That your anger is on your standards.
Correct.
You could have never, post Sonny Jurgensen or post Joe Theismann, pushed Ryan Fitzpatrick on your fan base to be like, are you out of your mind? But when people's standards lower, now when you're angry, there's a reason for it. It's not us, it's you. You're mad at the franchise, your standards have dropped, so you're just angry that we're telling you the truth, which is Ryan's like one of those top three backups in the league. That's what he is.
Well, you're not going to go into a season as him as the starter and expect anyone around the league to be taking this seriously, or even within your own division. Like, Dak is back. Daniel Jones and is going to improve, and they've put a ton of pieces around him. They've completely invested in giving him every tool that he needs to be successful. I don't know what's going to happen in Philly, but at least they're investing in Jalen Hurts. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. So what I think is the only scenario that like is going to make sense. We know what's going on with Sam Darnold, right? So the Jets obviously want more than the third round, or, you know, we're hearing, according to Kimberly Martin, a late third round or fourth round conditional pick. I think they're just going to wait till the draft, because it's really the Jets have all the power in that situation.
Right.
We know they're going to take a quarterback, so they can wait all the way up into the draft.
Yeah.
And then Washington has no moves to make, and then they end up giving them a little bit more for Sam Darnold, which I don't think a second round pick is egregious for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, no, it's all
you
possible.
Don't have a quarterback, so right. I think that's what's happening. So you were just talking about UCLA's Cinderella run in the NCAA tournament. It continued last night as they knocked off one seed Michigan 51-49 in a great game. Defensive battle.
Michigan had a great shot. Michigan just couldn't. Last 3 minutes, Michigan couldn't hit a shot. They had a chance. It was Michigan's game. And they just couldn't hit a shot.
It was. They joined VCU from 2011 as the only two teams to ever advance from the first four to the final four. So the 11-seeded Bruins will now face number one overall Gonzaga on Saturday. The Zags easily took down the 6-seed USC, 85-66, to win and advance. USC Gonzaga was not a very competitive game, but this one was great. UCLA is now 22-9 this season. They did lose their last four games before entering the tournament, including a quarterfinal loss in the Pac-12 tournament to Oregon State. So this is a really
crazy run.
It has been a great tournament.
It is. We didn't have Duke and Kentucky and Louisville. But, I mean, I'm a West Coast guy, so a lot of Pac-12, a lot of Gonzaga. Listen, before the tournament started, I think we said this on the air. Gonzaga and Baylor looked like the two best teams. Michigan would have been, but they lost their best player. So it's kind of ending up, Gonzaga's going to, I just don't think UCLA has the firepower to stay with them.
And I don't know anymore. I mean, I was with you. I thought USC was going to be a little bit closer than that. But Gonzaga is just incredible offensively. The other matchup for the Final Four for the men is Baylor and Houston.
I'll take Baylor.
South Carolina beat Texas 62-34, and Stanford beat Louisville 78-63 in the women's tournament. So the women's Final Four is South Carolina, Stanford, Arizona, UConn. So any of those matchups in the national championship game are going to be incredible. But we have two great Final Fours heading into this weekend.
We do. Great stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Kevin Durant comes unglued with Michael Rapoport. Highly inappropriate messages he has to apologize for. I'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Enjoy spa-like comfort. Save big in your water bill with Navien tankless water heaters. Visit tanklessmadesimple.com. Sandwiches in 10 minutes. Okay, so this KD Michael Rapoport thing is KD had to apologize. Everybody's always apologizing to KD because they hurt his feelings, but he had to apologize for some foul, gross, vile direct messages he sent to actor Michael Rapoport. It went from just kind of busting each other up, which you do, too ugly. I don't know the rules of the internet. I thought when people direct message you never take it public. I thought that was private, but you can and people do. And you got to know, you know, be careful about what you text and what you do on DMs. It goes public. I've always had this theory. Whenever guys act tough, you know, there's the guy that in there's 30 and 4 act tough. You're hiding something. You're hiding your anger, your resentment, your insecurity. KD can often be tough guy. But what you find is he's very insecure. Everybody's always having to apologize. A newspaper once called him Mr. Unreliable. They had to apologize because his feelings were hurt. Steve Kerr last week essentially had to apologize because of something he said on a podcast that could offend KD. I mean, KD is brittle physically and sometimes brittle emotionally. Remember when he was a free agent and everybody knew he was going to leave? And people kept asking about him. He got upset about that.
Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up.
Maybe KD needs to. Instead of confronting his issues with Russell Westbrook and the coaches, he just bolted. Instead of confronting Draymond Green and his issues with Steve Kerr, he just bolted. Maybe KD needs to grow up. Men confront their problems. Kids don't. They run. The reality is here, everybody's always walking on eggshells around KD. Don't offend KD. Don't get mad at KD. When I see those missives and those angry, vile shout-outs or whatever you want to call them on DM, I see a guy that's his exterior is hiding the interior, which is deeply insecure. He's a great basketball player. Nobody would deny that. He's absolutely unreliable. Amazing, excuse me. But I want to talk about unreliable. About 5 years ago, and I see this all the time, I am obviously very critical of certain quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, I was very critical of. Let's just use Baker. Johnny Manziel's another. And I said, there's a difference between being talented and I'm going to build the franchise around you. Like, I can build the franchise around Russell Wilson or Tom Brady. Those personalities, Matt Ryan, I can build a franchise around those personalities. But again, a lot of people in broadcasting are talented. I'm not building my company around them. They're like immature. They get into trouble. They say dumb stuff. They do dumb stuff. They're inappropriate. And when anybody years ago would say, KD's better than LeBron, I'm like, God, you're just seeing a tiny part of building around. LeBron, 20 years, has been the face of the league. He carries the ratings. He carries the brand. LeBron doesn't play, the ratings go into the tank last week. He carries the entire league. And in 20 years, and LeBron had no easy life growing up. In 20 years, LeBron's had one, their word, not mine, misstep, the decision. Yeah, he gave $1 million to a Boys and Girls Club. Oh, shudder, the shame of it. But a lot of people, including the commissioner, thought it was kind of cruel and mean to Cleveland. Whatevs. That's the knock on LeBron. Can you imagine? And LeBron had a hard childhood. 20 years. I mean, Justin Bieber unraveled after about 7. Music stars, actors unravel after about 4 months in the headlines. LeBron has been front and center of this league, carrying it for 2 decades. No missteps. Now, you may not like his politics, but that's not a misstep. That's just how he believes and how he feels. But it's I've said this. It's remarkable. I mean, this was a kid who grew up, LeBron, with chaos in his life. Didn't know where he was going to live. Basically had a surrogate father, a coach. No missteps. I don't know Kevin Durant's background. I'm sure he had some wonderful people in it. But Kevin Durant struggled a year into Golden State. He struggled in Oklahoma City. Struggling now, he's obviously got some anger stuff in Brooklyn. So it's not that Kevin's not a great talent. I could never build around him. I said this before. I said this week. I had 4 or 5 guys I could build my franchise around. I could build it around Steph. Mature, great, gets banged up a little, but I know he's selfless. I could build it around LeBron. Increasingly, I could build it around Jimmy Butler. I think the guy Jokic in Denver is rock solid. But that's, whenever I criticize quarterbacks, it's not, I'm not picking on them. Baker's talented. Do I want to put my $5 billion franchise in his hands? Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, they're just built for it. I trust them. And LeBron has been the emotional and physical rock of the league for 18 years. You can just rely on him. You can make him play a game back-to-back, put him on TV, go to the bubble. What was the only team in the bubble, the only veteran-laden team that played well? LeBron's team. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Giannis, other veteran teams, Simmons, Embiid, all the other teams with veterans. LeBron's team flourished. Why? Because LeBron. LeBron had a meeting about 8 games in and said, fellas, it stinks. We miss our wives. We miss our kids. But we're in this thing. We're in a pandemic. Let's rule. Let's take this thing over. And they did. And it just, one of the, oh, you're such a LeBron homer. It's the burden of having to carry a franchise. The burden of, yeah, look, Bill Gates has made a lot of money, but he has been the face of Microsoft for 45 years. So when idiots pick on him on Twitter, I'm like, do you understand? 45 years, Bill Gates hasn't had a misstep. Elon Musk tries to go a weekend without one. So it's like the rock of the NBA is LeBron. And when you compare him and Durant, Durant's not, you can't trust Durant physically. And increasingly on an emotional level, you get this awful stuff. I don't think Kevin's a bad guy. I don't. I really don't. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's dealing with stuff personally that, you know, therapy could help, social circle could help, whatever. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think good people say dumb stuff on social media. I think it happens. I've done it. Like, we all have a temper. Somebody pokes us. You know, we get all riled up. I don't think KD's a bad dude. And I think he's a remarkable player. But the difference with LeBron and Durant is emotionally and physically, when I saw this story break, the first thing I thought of was LeBron. Like, LeBron would never put himself in this. Would never get involved in this stuff. LeBron, pull back, stay out of it. You know, and I'm not taking sides. Michael Rappaport, it was a DM. I'm not a big fan of taking DMs public. I don't think that's a, some people don't like that. I don't know, what's the rule on that?
I mean, I don't know that there's a rule on it, but in general, like, we all know everything that you text or say on the phone can be screenshotted.
So it's okay. I always thought DMs were private.
I wouldn't say it's okay.
Okay.
If I know somebody screenshots stuff, I generally don't say right. much to
screenshot
them.
Being, you DM me, I take a shot of it.
Take a picture of it, yeah.
All right. The lexicon's very confusing to me. It's all out. It's all new.
I don't know that there's rules.
I've told my wife, be careful what you text. In the next 10 years, all our texts will be public. I believe in the next 10 years, all our texts will be public. Somebody will find your texts and put them out there. So my texts are all day, love you, world's great, no enemies, what's for dinner, I'd like chicken parm. Even my texts are vague now. Hour 3 next.